So, thus far we have completed the Nectar of Instruction, the Isopanishad, and we have done the overview for the chapters 1 through 9 of Bhagavad Gita. Now, the Bhagavad Gita overview is something which is not included as the part of final exam. It is a kind of a preview or a taste to jump into the next semester, which is Bhagavad Gita. Before we read, one must understand, we had this very nice story from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Mahaprabhu took sannyas and he went off on a South India tour. He told his devotees that my brother Vishwaroop has taken sannyas and I haven't seen him since he has taken sannyas and I must go and search out my brother because I haven't seen him. Now Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Lord Krishna himself and he is the super soul and he knows everything that's happening. In spite of knowing the fact that his brother Vishwaroop had already passed away, he told this to the devotees to go on a South India tour. And many of his devotees wanted to accompany him. Nityananda Prabhu said, you can't go by yourself. You always are in ecstasy of love of God. You don't even know what's happening. So there should be somebody to guard you and I'll come with you. And Advaita Acharya said, no, I'll come with you. And Mahaprabhu knew that if he takes one of his devotees, the others will be disappointed. And he says, none of you will come with me. And then he took a young Brahmin named Kal Krishnadas and he set off. And when he traveled, Mahaprabhu came to Sri Rangam. And then he saw that there was a Brahmin who was illiterate. Now, that's a mystery. We'll try to know later about how a Brahmin can be an illiterate, but he was. And then he was trying to read Bhagavad Gita. Now, not knowing the Sanskrit, not knowing anything, he was just trying to read because his spiritual master had ordered him to read Bhagavad Gita. And he was reading. In fact, he had the Bhagavad Gita upside down and he was trying to read. And he was weeping and there were so many ecstatic emotions being manifested in that Brahmin. And because he was not a very learned person, he couldn't pronounce the mantras properly. And the other so-called educated and learned Brahmins were making fun of him. And Mahaprabhu went to this person and asked, so what is this that you are getting so much of joy reading Bhagavad Gita? And that Brahmin said, look, I'm not well-versed. I don't know much how to read. But my spiritual master asked me that I should read Bhagavad Gita every day. And when I see this picture of how the Supreme Personality of Godhead has become servant of his own devotee and how he's become a chauffeur or a charioteer to his own devotee, I think of that and I'm amazed. It makes me weep. And Mahaprabhu embraced this Brahmin and he said, you know the Bhagavad Gita in perfection. You know actually what is Bhagavad Gita. So the next semester when we read Bhagavad Gita, we seriously pray for the mercy of our Guru and Gauranga, mercy of Prabhupada, that we can actually understand Bhagavad Gita. Because if you see Barnes and Nobles or any other website, you'll find hundreds, if not thousands, of translations of Bhagavad Gita. And these are not done by people who are who wanted to make money. Hey, man, let me write a book on Bhagavad Gita and make some money. No, they were erudite scholars in Sanskrit. They read, they had big, big academic degrees and then they were translating Bhagavad Gita. Yet, Srila Prabhupada himself said that unless one is in a disciplic succession, one cannot realize what exactly is Bhagavad Gita and more importantly, act upon it. You may know Bhagavad Gita word by word. You can even break down the Sanskrit syllables and know perfectly all the verses, but yet one cannot even understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God in spite of all this academic knowledge of Bhagavad Gita. So, we'll beg at the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada and our acharyas that they give us strength to actually understand what Bhagavad Gita is when we read. And I'm just a fool. I'm just trying to serve the orders of the superiors and trying to serve you by reading Bhagavad Gita along with you. So last 3 weeks ago, last week we did not have the class, we completed the overview of Bhagavad Gita. But just because Bhagavad Gita is so fascinating, we'll do all the 18 chapters today, the overview. We'll read in the nutshell all the 18 chapters just to wet our memory. After that, I humbly request you that it'll be more interactive. We'll have an interactive session today on what your experiences were there during the first semester, what were the room for improvement, what are the good points, what are the areas for room for improvement. We can have an interactive session, and then we can get feedback on how do we go ahead. There are certain questions or certain scheduling issues or the content issues I want to talk, and then we can finalize. And we'll talk a little bit about the final exam also, and the dates especially. And so we'll make this as interactive as possible. And this will be probably the last class, unless the devotees want to have one more class wherein we can do sort of revision, but it's up to the devotees. It'll be optional, but this will be the last class for the first semester. And so let's get into the Bhagavad Gita, and then we can have the interactive session. So we'll open the page. Contents. The contents here. And then I would request that we'll have three chapters each. So you can. I'll start, and then you can just go ahead. Puja can do it, and then we can go ahead. Chapter 1. Observing the armies on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. As the opposing armies stand poised for battle, Arjuna, the mighty warrior, sees his intimate relatives, teachers, and friends. Mataji, we are in the contents. His intimate relatives, teachers, and friends in both armies ready to fight and sacrifice their lives. Overcome by grief and pity, Arjuna fails in strength, his mind becomes bewildered, and he gives up his determination to fight. Chapter 2, Contents of the Gita Summarized. Arjuna submits to Lord Krishna as his disciple, and Krishna begins his teachings to Arjuna by explaining the fundamental distinction between the temporary material body and the eternal spirit soul. The Lord explains the process of transmigration, the nature of selfless service to the Supreme, and the characteristics of a self-realized person. Chapter 3, Karma Yoga. Everyone must engage in some sort of activity in this material world, but actions can either bind one to this world or liberate from it. By acting for the pleasure of Supreme without selfish motives, one can be liberated from law of karma, action and reaction, and attain transcendental knowledge of the Self and the Supreme.
Chapter 4, Transcendental Knowledge. Transcendental knowledge, the spiritual knowledge of the soul of God and of their relationship is both purifying and liberating. Such knowledge is a fruit of selfless devotional action, karma yoga. The Lord explains the remote history of the Gita, the purpose and significance of his periodic descents to the material world and the necessity of approaching a guru or realized teacher. Chapter 5, Karma Yoga, Action in Krishna Consciousness. Outwardly performing all actions but inwardly renouncing their fruits, the wise man, purified by the fire of transcendental knowledge, attains peace, detachment, forbearance, spiritual vision, and bliss. Chapter 6, Dhan Yoga. Ashtanga Yoga, a mechanical meditative practice, controls the mind and senses and focuses concentration on the Paramatma, the Super Soul, the form of the Lord situated in the heart. This practice culminates in samadhi, full consciousness of the Supreme.
Chapter 7, Knowledge of the Absolute. Lord Krishna is the Supreme Truth, the Supreme Cause and sustaining force of everything, both material and spiritual. advanced souls surrender unto him in devotion, whereas impious souls divert their minds to other objects of worship. Chapter 8. Attaining the Supreme. By remembering Lord Krishna in devotion throughout one's life, and especially at the time of death, one can attain to his supreme abode beyond the material world. Chapter 9. The Most Confidential Knowledge. Lord Krishna is the Supreme Godhead and the supreme object of worship. The soul is eternally related to him through transcendental devotional service, bhakti. By reviving one's pure devotion, one returns to Krishna in the spiritual realm.
Chapter 10, The Opulence of the Absolute. All wondrous phenomena showing power, beauty, grandeur, and sublimity, either in the material world or in the spiritual world, are but partial manifestations of Krishna's divine energies and opulence. As the supreme cause of all causes and support and essence of everything, Krishna is the supreme object of worship for all beings. Chapter 11, The Universal Form. Lord Krishna grants Arjuna divine vision and reveals his spectacular unlimited form as a cosmic universe. Thus he conclusively establishes his divinity. Krishna explains that his own all-beautiful human-like form is the original form of Godhead. One can perceive this form only by pure devotional service. Chapter 12, Devotional Service. Bhakti Yoga, pure devotional service to Lord Krishna, is the highest and most expedient means for attaining pure love for Krishna, which is the highest end of spiritual existence. Those who follow the supreme path develop divine qualities.
Chapter 13, Nature, the Enjoyer, and the Consciousness. One who understands the difference between the body and the soul and the super soul beyond them, both attains liberation from this material world. Chapter 14, The Three Modes of Material Nature. All the embodied souls are under the control of the three modes or qualities of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. Lord Krishna explains what these modes are and what these modes are, how they act upon us, how one transcends them, and the symptoms of one who has attained the transcendental state. Chapter 15, The Yoga of the Supreme Person. The ultimate purpose of Vedic knowledge is to detach oneself from the entanglement of the material world and to understand Lord Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who understands Krishna's supreme identity surrenders unto him and engages in his devotional service.
Chapter 16, The Divine and Demoniac Natures. Those who possess demoniac qualities and who live whimsically without following the regulations of scripture attain lower births and further material bondage. But those who possess divine qualities and live regulated lives, abiding by scriptural authority, gradually attain spiritual perfection. Chapter 17, The Divisions of Faith. There are three types of faith, corresponding to and evolving from the three modes of material nature. Acts performed by those whose faith is in passion and ignorance yield only impermanent material results, whereas acts performed in goodness in accordance with scriptural injunctions purify the heart and lead to pure faith in Lord Krishna and devotion to him. Chapter 18, Conclusion, The Perfection of Renunciation. Krishna explains the meaning of renunciation and the effects of the modes of nature on human consciousness and activity. He explains Brahman realization, the glories of the Bhagavad Gita, and the ultimate conclusion of the Gita. The highest path of religion is absolute, unconditional, loving surrender unto Lord Krishna, which frees one from all sins, brings one to complete enlightenment, and enables one to return to Krishna's eternal spiritual abode.
Thank you. Bhagavad Gita ki jai. So, in these 18 chapters, the Acharyas have explained that the first six chapters correspond to Jnana or knowledge. the second six chapters, the first six chapters correspond to karma, or karma yoga, or how to perform karma, the first six chapters. The second six chapters correspond to bhakti, and the third six chapters correspond to jnana yoga. And the reason acharyas have explained why bhakti yoga is second is because it is covered, it is protected by karma yoga on one side and jnana yoga on other side. If it's something is very valuable, you try to cover it, you try to protect it. So this is the verdict of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and also Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur on the Bhagavad Gita. Now, in the next semester, we will go into depth in each of this. We'll try to read the purports of Srila Prabhupada down to the bone. Pardon my using that term. And we'll try to understand what Prabhupada is saying. There have been many instances wherein Prabhupada has translated Bhagavad Gita with slightly different connotations, and this has given some sort of not favorable reviews from some of these so-called scholars. And we read Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita with a view of establishing what Prabhupada wrote and completely like saying that, you know, this is what the Acharya has said for this time. Because Prabhupada, when he wrote Bhagavad Gita, ISKCON was a fledgling movement. And the devotees whom he was trying to preach to were not completely acquainted. They were not from India, and they were not completely acquainted with the Bhagavad Gita completely as it is, or knowing different aspects. And so in some of the purports, one of the not favorable reviews has been that why Prabhupada is trying to say everything in terms of bhakti. Even when there is Ashtanga Yoga, why is bhakti being mentioned? So, and when we read Bhagavad Gita next semester, we are going to read it to different Prabhupada's purports, and to make our minds so fixed and our intelligence so fixed on these aspects. Some of the exercise we can do next semester is we can list out all the Mayavada arguments. Prabhupada writes beautiful Mayavada arguments, and Mayavadi say that this is this, and Prabhupada smashes that argument using Bhagavad Gita's points. So we can strengthen our own intelligence when we are reading Prabhupada's purports. And that's the whole idea. When we come together, we read, we discuss, we understand, we make the purports threadbare. We talk, and then, you know, there are doubts. You know, this verse Krishna says is Ashtanga Yoga. And in the purport, Prabhupada says, it's all right. If you can chant Hare Krishna, that should be said. It doesn't make sense. I mean, we can discuss all these things. Because in the sixth chapter, if you see, in many purports, Krishna says you should go to the forest, you should sit on a asana, you should close your eyes, tip the tail of nose, and Prabhupada writes in the purport, please chant Hare Krishna. So it seems apparently contradictory. And we'll try to see, why is Prabhupada writing just for the sake of writing, or is there more deep reason? We'll try to investigate and be established in those reasons why Prabhupada is writing like this. Because, you know, from the strictly perspective, in the sixth chapter, it's impossible to actually go to forest and do those things in present day age time. Not just because it's Kali Yuga and we have jobs, but because even to go to forest and to do all those asanas and dhyana yogas which is mentioned by the Lord, there are certain steps. And sixth chapter clearly gives you what are those steps before even you can go to forest. Not knowing that, people just jump to this conclusion, oh, we have to go to forest and sit and do yogas. No. And the beauty is, Prabhupada's purports say that even if you go to forest, sit, close, meditate your eyes, even if you get it, you still won't get love of Godhead. So these are all the aspects I'm just trying to bring out. We'll read. You know, we'll all these things will come out to the top, and we'll be firmly established to see why Prabhupada's purports are. And we will be able to defend Prabhupada's purports in case somebody wants to challenge them. Sure, go ahead. That's fine. So these are some of the things where we go in depth to read. And then also we'll try to make our own mind, our own intelligence strong in Krishna consciousness. Because admittedly, at least my mind is very like flimsy. It goes from here to there, creates so many desires, thinks of so many paths of being happy and safe in this world. So when mind brings out all these arguments, oh, maybe we should do like that, and you know, it'll be happy. But so our intelligence, Krishna says, our intelligence is stronger than the mind, and our intelligence should step in to say, mind, you are doing nonsense, or you are thinking nonsense, you are talking nonsense. Unless one we read Prabhupada's books while we are chanting Hare Krishna, our intelligence won't be so strong as to be able to control the mind to say, no, that's not correct. That's not what scriptures say. Because our mind is so devious, it will use scriptures to kind of do its own activities. And we will cultivate that. We'll try to go more into it. So that's just the gist. Okay, now it's a little bit interactive. And then and those who are on the watching through the online, please do send an email to me saying what your preferences are in case you can't speak up. So the next semester is, we have three more semesters, and we have to complete the whole of Bhagavad Gita, all the 18 chapters, and the Nectar of Devotion, the Eastern Wave. Now, the Nectar of Devotion is divided into four directions, the Eastern, the Southern, Western, and Northern. The Eastern is the 19 chapters. It starts with it'll go on till what is the qualifications of bhakti, who can do bhakti, what is the process of bhakti, what is sadhana bhakti, all the way till prema bhakti, bhava bhakti and prema bhakti. That is the first direction of Nectar of Devotion. After that, it's the Southern is most, they talk about ecstatic symptoms for love of Godhead. And then the Western Wave talks about the five rasas, and the Northern Wave talks about seven secondary rasas and the mixture of rasas. So there are 51 chapters overall in Nectar of Devotion, but Bhakti Shastri, it is recommended that we complete 19 chapters for the Eastern Wave for Nectar of Devotion. In the outline which has been sent for Bhakti Shastri, it has been mentioned that every semester, we'll do six chapters of Bhagavad Gita and six chapters of Nectar of Devotion. Now, it is highly flexible because we can either do Bhagavad Gita completely and then do Nectar of Devotion, or we can do both. So, I would like to know how do you want it? We can do it, the complete Bhagavad Gita first and then do Nectar of Devotion. Is that right? Okay. No, that's fine. It's, yes, Rakshit Prabhu.
How is Bhagavad Gita going to be done? Is it verse by verse discussion, or are we going to go through a whole chapter in a sitting? In what format?
Well, these are my thoughts, and they are subject to, you know, review. We will meet once in 2 or 3 weeks based on the size of the chapter or the number of verses, and we'll complete the whole chapter. And then the notes will be there, given in advance for the chapter. And we can go through the notes, and then you can read the chapter. And at the end, we can have a small discussion on that chapter. I'll give an overview before we start the chapter and the notes. And then we can go through the whole chapter, and then we can come back later, have some discussion, and then go to the second chapter. See, the first chapter is, we have 42 or 43 verses, I don't remember. The second chapter is 72 verses. So we can't simply say 2 weeks is enough. So we'll have at least, like, you know, 3 weeks for first chapter, and maybe another 3-4 weeks, 2 weeks or 2.5 weeks for the first chapter, and 3 or 4 weeks for second chapter. In that way, we are looking at least about 16 to 18 weeks to complete the first six chapters.
Are you going to read the purport also?
Absolutely. The whole idea is to read the purport and to understand, try to understand what Prabhupada is saying. Because unless we read purports, it's hard to understand what Krishna is saying. So you think it's better that we do the whole of Bhagavad Gita first and then do Nectar of Devotion? Is that something which we can? At this point of time, this is just an opening of the debate. It's not, the decision need not be final in this very session. We can just get more feedback. But I would agree to that too, and that will be a nice way to go, because we can go through, it's a flow, Bhagavad Gita is a flow, we can go through all the verses. And in the 18th chapter, when Krishna says, surrender unto me, then then we jump into nectar of devotion, how to actually surrender onto Krishna. And nectar of devotion gives you a practical aspect on how to surrender onto Krishna. And how surrender of Krishna, and it's said, right, that Krishna says in the 18th chapter that you surrender onto me, I'll prevent you and protect you from any sinful activities. And in Nectar of Devotion, nicely, you get into it, and Nectar of Devotion says how by performing devotional service, all sorts of sinful activities are completely destroyed. And how many sinful activities are there, how they are destroyed. So, that'll be a nice segue. Yeah, sure, we can do that. So we'll do that. But the only problem with that is that we may do a little bit more chapters per semester to cover up. So in next three semesters, we have to do two books, or at least Nectar of Devotion and Bhagavad Gita. So if the last semester is devoted entirely to Bhagavad Gita, Nectar of Devotion, then we may have to complete everything in this semester. The other option is we can have seven chapters in the first semester, seven chapters in the second semester, that will be 14. The four chapters in the third semester, then followed by Nectar of Devotion. Nectar of Devotion is not that much of reading. Reading is, the whole pages are, for the first 19 chapters, are probably 50 to 60 pages, just reading matter in Nectar of Devotion. It's right here. So Nectar of Devotion has preface and introduction. That is the part of, we have to read that. There's no choice around it. So we have 143 pages we have for the nine chapters. So about 150 pages we have for the Nectar of Devotion, whole of Nectar of Devotion, compared to seven or almost 800 or 900 pages for Bhagavad Gita. So we can do that. So, and we are flexible. Again, the whole idea is that it's not like a gun is pointed to the head and then we have to complete. That's not the purpose. But then we need to have a justifiable time limit also. It has to work both the ways. So let me see. I'll just drop a schedule on how much can we complete realistically for each semester. It'll be a little bit more than six chapters. Maybe we'll have seven chapters and see how it goes, seven, seven. And the third semester we can have four chapters and then Nectar of Devotion. Agreeable? Too much? Too little? Okay, so we'll do that then. Unless I get email feedback from other devotees also, we'll just try to do that. And then I'll revise the schedule and then send it across. Yes, Mataji. Sure, we can do it.
Because I think next semester we'll have more in-depth Bhagavad Gita, means we need more discussions.
Right, so right. It's a good idea.
We can, or Skype conference, or even we can share if we need to. But
yeah,
we can have conference calls.
We can do that. Instead of having like meeting in 3 weeks, we can have maybe once in 2 weeks or something like that, or even based on whenever we can.
Yeah, that would be nice. Because 2 weeks once, if we miss, then I missed for 1 month.
Right. The other thing is, what do you think is better, meeting on phone, or I can come here to temple every week or every other 2 weeks? I have no problems coming physically. Temple is better. Right. Okay, we'll have the frequency more. And for those devotees who can't make it, they always have. Yes, Mataji.
No, I was just thinking we'll meet in the temple, but in between 2 weeks.
Right.
I think we should meet once in the phone or something.
Okay.
So it means a personal meeting is required, but I'm just saying to increase the frequency, we can meet once in between sometimes.
You can consider that. But if you are meeting more frequently in the temple, then sure. I mean, like, or if, yeah, we can think about it. For those devotees who want to have more, I can call or something like that instead of having a conference call, because If you are meeting in more frequency in the temple, then maybe the conference, maybe the phone.
No, meeting more frequently in the temple. Also, people have to travel every week.
Right.
It will be too much.
Oh, I see.
So
okay.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay, we can.
So,
okay.
Something we can.
Sure.
Whatever.
Definitely something to think about, Nathiji. Thank you for the suggestion. Yes, Rakshit Prabhu.
January, and do you go till June, July, or till what period of time?
That was my second interactive question here. The dates is that tentatively I'm thinking of January 16th as the date for final exam. Is that okay, or should we have it? Because last week when we said the devotees will be on book marathon, till January 3rd, and Ramananda Sakaprabhu brought up this very valid point that we need at least some time to prepare. And then I said, so January 16th, January 2nd week might be a good Saturday. Yeah, I know you will be gone to India, so I have to work out some way to because the weekend before that will be January 10th. We can do it on January 10th if the devotees can do it. Is that okay? Or January 17th is needed? January 16th, I mean. Right. I understand. So everybody is like, you know, it's just, but we will make sure that, you know. We'll work out something probably after you come back. Well, to be honest with you, Mataji, I haven't finalized the format yet, but it's going to be fill in the blanks, multiple choices. It's and few essay questions. But essay questions will be, it won't be like, you know, some sort of a story writing thing, but it will be more specifically based on stuff. For example, I was talking about one sample question. Can we please enumerate three types of miseries which the living entity is subjected to with both English and Sanskrit terms? And then, you know, that will carry probably 6 marks. And then if you miss out one, then, you know, you lose 1 mark. That way kind of thing.
So what will be the goal of the exam? Like, what are we actually trying to test?
So the whole idea is that how much have we absorbed of Prabhupada's books? How much have we committed the key concepts to memory? That's the whole goal. It's definitely not, you know, we have to memorize books. For those who are coming from India, I know what you're talking about. For those who are coming from India, it's like that one line and that one particular word is the right answer. Anything else you substitute, that is wrong. Even though the word is correct or the meaning of the sentence is correct, but that exact word has to give you the right answer. Otherwise, wrong. No, it won't be like that. That's not at all the goal. No. Memorize Sanskrit verses. Yes, Mataji. Yes. Yeah, whatever has been asked for the homework to memorize, one of them might come up. Mantra don't have to remember, at least the mantra, the mantra and the translation. In your own words. Again, you don't have to have the exact word which Prabhupada writes, and your marks will be directed in case you don't put the A or the or an in front of it. So not that kind of thing. You should be able to explain in your own words what this mantra is about. The whole goal is just to commit, you know. When the whole idea is that we strengthen our minds and we are able to explain Prabhupada's philosophy of Krishna consciousness to others in our own words. That's the whole goal of Bhakti Shastri. I did see few tests conducted in India by some of the temples for Bhakti Shastri, and I did find that it was there. That exact word has to be there, otherwise it's kind of, no, that won't be there. I'll try to make it as fun and as, you know, informative as we can.
What is the duration of the test?
I'm between 2 to 3 hours. Yeah, because you know, this time what is happening is that, you know, all the marks are being evaluated just based on final exam. From next semester on, final exams probably will be an hour, half an hour to 1 hour. And the homework will carry a lot of weight. So if there are six homeworks in the six chapters, then 60% of marks will be from the homeworks, and rather than everything coming from the final exam. That way, when you get into the final exam, you know you are assured of certain percentage of marks, and there will be some points deducted for late submissions, just to help motivate. Yes, Prabhuji, Pooja is raised her hand first, and then after that I'll come to you. No, it's closed book. I can give you open book test, but probably you won't find the answers in the book. I can give you book questions about each Upanishad, but you won't find the answers in there, even if I gave you the book. So it's, probably it's better to have closed book. Yes, Rakshit Prabhu.
No, I was just going to say, regarding this deduction of marks for late submissions.
Right.
I don't know about the student body in general, but sometimes it was unclear when the homework was due.
Okay.
For example, in the beginning, when the first three classes were conducted,
right,
the dates were specified that homework is due by such and such a date. But then there were more homeworks when you looked at the notes of the other classes. And the message that came across was, do the readings. See that you read these verses from 8 to 16 or 8 to 17. But it didn't spell out that for those verses, homework was due on a particular date.
Okay.
It's unclear what the deadline was.
Well, thank you for that particular point, and I will make sure that we absolutely have those dates lined up and clear way in advance for the next semester. And in case those dates are not clear, then points won't be deducted. It'll be on me.
So for this semester, then, all the homework that applies, is it due at the end of the semester?
Rakshit Prabhu, the whole thing was we did not have any homework points for the exam, for evaluation. So that's why I was a little bit flexible. So you can please, you have to submit it as soon as you can. And before, say, in this case, January 1st, let's put it at deadline.
Okay, so the 60% that you were mentioning would go towards the homework doesn't apply to this exam.
No.
Okay.
We were starting off, and then in the next semester, I thought it'll be much better all around that we have weightage for homework. For this semester, all the evaluation will be done based on the final exam. So the next semester, probably it will be more.
For the next semester, like one of the format could also be like you take exams every couple of weeks or like 2 months rather than having one the full exam at the end, so that that makes sense.
That can be one of
because in the universities I don't know, they follow that so that it is like you prepare in chunks.
Right.
Rather than doing
that'll definitely can be considered. Probably, but for the next semester, we'll just go with the final. The idea being that your homework is already done with some percentage of marks, and you have got about probably 50 to 60% of the marks in the homework. And there are open book, and they're all like you can go and answer. And the final exam can be like, you know, just the key concepts. But based on the feedback on next semester, if the devotees think that there is too much of work to committing to memory or even to understand the key points of the Bhagavad Gita because it's unlike what we have learned till now, we can do it. In terms of content, because next Isopanishad and Nectar of Instructions were not that much amount of content as to reading goes, and the next semester it will be a lot more. Definitely, we can think of that. And maybe in the midway in the semester, we can take a poll and see if devotees want to have mid-semester exams for chapters 1 to 3 or 1 to 4 or something like that. We can work that out. So, January 16th then? Okay. It's Saturday, yeah. So we can have like a 2-week break and then we can start probably on February. February 1st or 2nd or 3rd, we can start the, I don't know, the, I will look at the calendar to see which is the first Sunday in February. And we can start some, it's we can start the second semester. So, thank you so much, Matthew. I thought in the beginning, sorry. No, I'm sorry.
So, Prabhuji, the nectar of devotion, is it verses? What is it? Is it verses, chapters?
Nectar of devotion is, Prabhupada has written summary study. The original Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by Rupa Goswami, it had 2,159 verses divided in over four divisions or four directions. So Prabhupada, he didn't write an exhaustive word-by-word translation. He just gave a brief. He went through all the verses and he gave a gist. So Nectar of Devotion is interesting in the sense that it may seem a little bit of a little bit random because we don't see the flow of original verses, but Prabhupada did it as a summary study, and when we go through it, then we can just discuss more and more. It's the chapters are short, but they are very compressed, and then we can go into more detail. So, one thing I wanted to do is so there is this book called Surrender Unto Me. It's written by Bhurijan Prabhu for Vrindavan Institute of Higher Education. he was a teacher at Vrindavan Institute of Higher Education teaching Bhakti Shastri, and so he taught this subject matter for a long time, and he wrote this book. For those who are interested in going more deep, this is optional. I repeat, this is optional. We don't have to read from this. But if you want to go more deeper, then you can get this copy. It's available at krishna.com. But it's not needed. We will try to focus on Prabhupada's purports, and then we can have an interactive discussion. And I assure you that that Prabhupada's purports itself are quite substantial. And to read, if you had more time, sure, I mean, like, we have Bhagavad Gita purports or commentaries written by Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, by Baldev Vidya Bhushan, by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And we can go into depth, and, you know, each Bhagavad Gita verse is very deep and we can cover a lot, but in view of time, we just limit ourselves to Prabhupada Bhagavad Gita. So, this is the Nectar of Devotion. This is just because we are not going to read this at least the whole of 2010. We will do it in 2011. And this is a book called Waves of Devotion, written by His Holiness Dhanurdhar Swami. He was also teaching the Nectar of Devotion, and then he wrote a book which complements, which helps as a study guide to read. based on our efforts next year, we will take a poll on seeing if we are going to read both. If we are going to read Nectar of Devotion and then Dhanurdhar Maharaj side by side to see if you can understand. So we'll take a poll next semester. But this is like far out in future, just wanted to let you know. So one room for improvement I got from Rakshit Prabhu is that the homework due dates were not clear. So I want to really throw it out and see if there are more room for improvement. What you felt, if you have any observations, where the high points, the low points, together we can make this as fun and as much interactive as possible, and as much as an educational experience. So I just open it up. Yes.
Prabhuji, for the homework, normally you would send only those verses that are necessary for those 2 weeks of study, and you would send those verses. And then for the next homework, you'll send the additional verses. And then when we do the homework, you know, we at least I just write my answers in the same file, and I would send it to you. But in the end, at the end of the, you know, the whole study, what I'm finding is I have some answers in one file, you know, some answers in another file. There is no, like, you know, one file that has got everything. So if you already have questions prepared for the whole of, for the whole course, would it be possible just to send the whole thing so that we can just, you know, put our answers, so that in the end, you know, we'll have everything in one file only, instead of multiple files? I mean, if that is not the case, then I guess we have to go with whatever you're doing.
Right. I don't think it's possible for me to send everything upfront. I'll try to send probably a little bit more in advance. Okay. But I'm sorry, I won't be able to send all of them. But that being said, I was just thinking what would be the other way to have the answers. One of the other ways is that the notes can be in a Word document, and then I can have the questions in a spreadsheet. So you can have one row for questions and one row for answers, and the chapter one. And I can keep adding to questions to that, and you can keep, that is something which you can work with, and we can do that. So in Excel, there is a sheet in the bottom. For one single Excel workbook, you can have multiple sheets in the bottom. And so all those questions can be there in that particular sheet, and I can keep adding it. So you can have it there, you can copy it into that, and then is that something which...
That is also okay, but I think whatever we are compared to what you are already doing, but whatever you are doing is fine right now. I mean, if compared to what you are proposing, I don't know how it works.
Well, one of the devotees also suggested that after the homework is submitted, that I give the answers to all the questions, and because that way it will help to have like the standard answers. So for the next semester, what I can do is because this time I did not release the answers immediately after the homework because not everybody submitted on time. So from next semester, since we have a deadline, after that deadline, or 3-4 days after the deadline, I can publish the answers for all the questions. And so in that way, you can, at the end of the semester, there will be just one file with all the questions and answers. And is that something which will be work with?
Yeah, yes, Prabhuji, that will work perfect.
Okay. We can publish out the answers also. And then... in the same notes, when I attach the notes for the next chapter, the answers to the previous chapters are published. And that way we can keep on adding. And we'll have just... At the end, we'll just have one file with questions and answers and the notes. Because one of the devotees was like, when are you going to publish the answers? I need the answers. I said, because not everybody kind of, gave the answers. I can't publish right now. But so. Any other... This is work in progress. We can keep getting our feedback and then keep adding and as we move forward. So February, I'll the action items for me are, we'll make sure that I'll have a a schedule as early as I can, so that for the upcoming semester we'll have a breakdown of the chapters and then what are the time limits for each chapter and the homework due dates and things like that. So once it is done, then we can have a little bit of talk before we actually complete into the semester, if anybody devotees had any feedback on that. But I'll try to give as much time. Well, any other? Four or five now. Rakshit Prabhu, you're giving the class right now?
No, actually, Bali Maharaj has a schedule.
Ah, I see. So we have... time, time. Okay, okay, okay. let's see. So, any benefits or any positive things you found? Or it's like at the end of first semester, it's like, oh man, why did I actually sign up for this? It's yes.
So Prabhuji, one question is, let's say some devotees do not pass the test.
Okay.
So is there any course that they can take again or is it that they are now they are disqualified for the Bhakti Shastra because they failed the
test? No, actually nobody is disqualified. I'll haunt them like a ghost till they complete. That being said, there will definitely be a makeup exam. Probably they'll have to wait for the next semester round, because after this semester, this batch of Bhakti Shastri, we'll have the second, and so the devotees can join. In fact, we have three devotees who are joining us next semester, and they will have missed the first semester, and they have to make up in the next round. We have Milan Doshi Prabhu joining us and one devotee from Texas. And Hans Priya Mataji has agreed to join. So we'll have three extra devotees from next semester. So there will be a makeup. And trust me, the whole idea is that the whole goal of setting the exam is the devotee should at least get 100%. So I'll try to make the questions as interactive as I can. Not really. No, probably. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Correct. There's no grade. There's no like points. There is no toppers. You know, this is like gold medalist and silver medalist and somebody else is not. It's just pass or fail. But that being said, I'll try to discuss the question paper. And if somebody's interested in knowing where they went wrong or they need room for improvement, I can sit personally and discuss the question paper on where it went. So that can be done. So the other thing is I have to... Vedavit Prabhu is in Pennsylvania and he's taking the course, so I have to make sure that some way the test is administered to him. If you think of any ideas or if you... Correct. But then you'll be traveling. You are leaving on the 15th, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So.
Prabhuji, one idea is you can take the test verbally.
That's what I think is going to be likely this semester. Is that okay? We'll talk about it. We'll take it offline. That's fine. Yeah. Well, I just wanted to, before we go, there is one other question. Are we going to meet or do you want us to meet for once more before the exams, or is this class going to be the last for this semester? Do you want us to have like a 1 hour session where we go through all the verses of Isopanishad and Nectar of Instruction, or is it something which... revision class? We can do that. Yeah, absolutely. I'm here to serve you in whatever way you want, I can do. We can have a revision class. Let's put it this way. January 1st will be in an absolute... December 31st will be an absolute deadline for completing all the homework. So that will give you at least about 4 weeks, 3 to 4 weeks from now today. And then probably the first week of January, we'll try to meet. And then we'll have a revision. And then by that time, I'll have the question paper ready also. I'll pass it out to you. No, I'm kidding. No, there is no homework. There will be no questions asked in the final exam from Bhagavad Gita. It is just when we are going to Bhagavad Gita, first day of the next semester is going to be directly Dharmakshetra, Kurukshetra's verse. So when we go into so depth, then you'll actually lose track. So when we do an overview, you'll say, okay, this is what Krishna is saying in the first chapter. This is what second chapter is, or what third chapter. Okay, at least I have a faint idea. I don't need to know everything, but at least I have a big picture. And then when we go into depth, then we won't lose sight of big picture. So that's the whole goal of having a Bhagavad Gita reading.
So there is an introduction also, which is quite substantial.
But we won't do introduction.
No,
we won't do it. Because the whole idea is that, you know, I was thinking of that, but given the fact that, we don't have that bandwidth or time right now so that the devotees can actually do it, because it's substantial, about 60 to 70 pages.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't think we'll do it. Directly jump in into the... Is that okay, Hari Guru Prabhu? Okay. The introduction? Yeah, definitely we can do that. Because Prabhupada wrote that as an introduction to the whole Bhagavad Gita for those who were not going to actually read the Bhagavad Gita. So, the only other thing I wanted to tell you is that I'm incredibly grateful for giving me this opportunity to serve you. And I beg for your forgiveness in case I committed any offenses or I displeased you in any way. The goal is to serve you. And I really am looking forward to being with you and having your association next semester and for many more semesters to come, even though we are not students or done with your Bhakti Shastri course. Briefly, I am also taking Bhakti Shastri along with Hanumat Prashit Maharaj, so it's been an interesting experience for me also just to actually learn and to share with others. So thank you very much for your association, and I beg for your association and your forgiveness and your tolerance and patience for me in future. The next semester, I know at times will come, you will curse me saying that, why did you set the deadline? And then I have to do so many other things, but you can curse me. I'm your servant, but you have to still submit. Right. And Mataji, also I have to, it's work all around. I need to keep track of who submitted homework, when, how much are the marks. Because this semester I didn't have to. I just needed to make sure that the homework is done and gave the feedback in case there were some discrepancies. That's to the extent of that. But next semester I have to keep track. First homework, when was it submitted, how much are the marks, second homework, third. And that way it goes on. So it's work all around, but it's good. At the end of the semester, you'll be glad that, you know, you don't have to worry about, like, you know, man, I have to do the homework, it's so late, it's late. So it'll be nice. Initially, it'll be tough. That I give. So thank you very much. And we'll see for a revision class. And we'll see based on how the devotees are. And we'll try to have a revision class. We'll take a poll on that. And then it's not set in stone yet. Hare Krishna.